everybody. I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. I was in California last week, missed doing a show for you, and now I'm back. I want to tell you about parts of my trip because, number one, there's a lot of food stories, and number two, it was very inspiring. I think for some of us who are lifetime activists, we need to take time to rejuvenate and restore and find opportunities to meet with like-minded people and know that we're not alone on our path. And originally, we scheduled a trip, my partner Gary DiMattei and I, to go to Northern California. We go there a lot for our work, which involves musical theater. But this time we went mostly for, I want to say, a vacation. I only, quote, worked one day, and it wasn't really work. What I was doing, I was participating in a concert memorial for a colleague and mentor in the musical theater business. He had retired, and then because he was getting older, he had some health problems and recently passed. I volunteered to take part in the memorial. I was very honored to be given one of the solo songs. I sang The Impossible Dream from the musical Man of La Mancha. And did I tell you my story about The Impossible Dream? I think I mentioned it before, but when I performed the role of Aldonza in Man of La Mancha and I would sit and listen to Don Quixote, the man playing the role of Don Quixote, sing The Impossible Dream, I always thought about my own impossible dream, which was the end of factory farming and exploitation of innocent animals for food. And I would think about that with every line of the song. And this time singing the song, it's really important as a performer and a singer not to really feel the lyrics too much because they may overwhelm your performance. And I know that that can happen to me because I feel these things very deeply. But the lines of the songs, yeah, I think I said them recently on one of these programs. It's so profound and poignant for today, especially with the politics that are going on and things with human nature that are being exposed today. Many of us thought that we were moving in such a positive direction in terms of racism, homophobism, sexism, and speciesism. Speciesism, the final ism, probably to be resolved. But seeing so many improvements with regard to racism and sexism and homophobism, and then seeing that many, many people still are racist, sexist, and homophobic, and coming out about it and being very aggressive and violent about it. It's a difficult thing and makes me realize the fight is greater. It's upsetting. And I thought about all of those things while I was singing this song. But we also went to the Bay Area to enjoy ourselves, and I got a lot out of it, and I want to share that with you. So the first thing we did was we visited Gary's niece, who just had a new baby, and there's nothing like sitting with some new baby energy. It's probably programmed within us, but there's so much joy and hope, and it's just a lovely, peaceful thing to be with a new baby, right? Especially if it isn't your own, because you can leave and you don't have to deal with the poop and all the other things that come with taking care of a baby. I'm just kidding. But it was lovely. And we crammed a lot of things into the first day of our travel. And after that visit, we went to see one of my very best friends in San Francisco. We were going to stay with her family for the evening. And since she had recently gotten a new job and was celebrating her birthday, and she's vegan, I wanted to find a vegan cake somewhere. And lo and behold, we were passing through Berkeley, and I found Timeless Coffee. which is a bakery and cafe, and it's all vegan. They had amazing, amazing things. Cakes and cookies and danishes. Okay, I have to do a disclaimer here, as always. I do not encourage the regular consumption of refined foods, including refined flours and sugars. And some people, if you have an addiction to these foods, shouldn't ever have them. It's kind of like those who have been alcoholics and can't have alcohol. And this is the way of the world. We all have our own challenges and struggles. But occasionally, for those who can, I think it's fantastic that we have these options. And if we're going to have refined foods, they should at least be cruelty-free. So I picked up a pumpkin spice vegan cheesecake and brought it to my friend's home, and we had it after dinner. It was fantastic. And what I loved about it, other than being vegan, is that it wasn't very sweet. I find that many of the sugary sweets today are overly sweet, unnecessarily, but it's because the standard American palate has been programmed to consume so much sugar, so much sweetness, that more is necessary. I guess it's like when you're a drug addict and you don't get the high that you always want after you get used to the drug, and then you need more. I guess it's the same with sugar, because refined sugar is a drug, or it can be to people who are susceptible. Anyway, I'm just glad that Timeless Coffee is out there. I've made my disclaimer. And if you know the way to San Jose, or the Bay Area, and you're looking for vegan treats, you might go to Berkeley and find it. Now, what led me there to find it is I needed a little makeup. I'm not a big makeup wearer, but I wanted to have some mascara when I did my concert later in the week and I was out. And I sometimes pick up makeup at 100% Pure. And they have a number of stores in California. They probably have stores, I don't think all over the country, but you can always get their stuff online. And most of it is vegan. And they use a lot of natural ingredients, like the mascara. I don't know if I would eat it, but it's got blueberries in it, and it smells really good. So I picked up the mascara, and this Timeless Coffee shop happened to be just a few stores down. So as we like to say, we got to save two birds with one key and accomplish two tasks in a matter of minutes. That was the Timeless Coffee shop. Okay, another great thing that I was so excited about doing. I've mentioned this before. We had gift certificates for two nights stay at the Stanford Inn in Mendocino, California. I've never been there. Gary's never been there. And he's a native Californian, and yet he's never been there. We had tried to get there in March, and we had a business trip. We had scheduled a few days early to go to California and go to Mendocino. And then this big snowstorm hit and we had to change our tickets so that we missed the trip to Mendocino. It was very, very sad because I was really looking forward to it. Well, we got to go. I finally got to visit the Stanford Inn by the Sea. Now, you may remember that I interviewed Joan and Jeff Stanford, the founders and owners, several years ago when they came out with the Raven's Cookbook, and that's the name of the restaurant at the inn. And I also interviewed Sid Garza Hillman, who works at the Stanford Inn, and he was working as a musician and actor originally, and then got interested in nutrition, and now he's a certified nutritionist and weight management coach, and he works with clients around the country, but also at the Stanford Inn. And he was there. It was great to see him. To begin with, the drive to Mendocino, we didn't even take the coastal route, which everyone says, oh, you should take the Route 1 coastal route. It's so beautiful. I'm glad we didn't. It would have taken a lot longer. And it's also kind of scary to drive all along the coast along that cliff. So we took the inland route, which was also so beautiful. And there's a spot where we're amongst all the redwoods, just stunning. And it makes it hard to believe that there are any problems at all in the world when you're driving amidst these massive, stunning trees with really no one around. The drive was very enjoyable. We arrived at the Stanford Inn, we checked in, we went to our room. Absolutely stunning. The grounds and the hotel, it's not gaudy. It's rustic, but everything is made with such quality and attention to detail. Our room had a fantastic view of the ocean. This is the Stanford by the sea, and the sea is right there in along with the woods. The air is so fresh and fabulous. The room was stunning. It had a fireplace, and in the place where hotels normally have a coffee pot with coffee and tea for your room, they had that. But instead of those disgusting little coffee creamers, they had a container of silk creamer. Again, disclaimer, I'm not saying that the silk creamer is the healthiest, but it's a lot better than those little non-dairy or dairy creamers that you might see by coffee pots in hotel rooms. This was the cruelty-free version. Just so lovely to be in a place like this. To know it exists is so fabulous. I can't even begin to tell you. When we checked in, we were told that from 3:30 to 4:30 would be the afternoon tea. And we went and we got our teas. Of course, you could have coffee if you wanted. I chose a turmeric shiitake tea, which was lovely. We enjoyed the afternoon treat, which was a very fresh tasting lemon bar. So good. And then we were free until dinner because we really wanted to check out the Raven's restaurant. I've seen the cookbook and I couldn't wait to go. And we walked around the grounds. They have this lovely, lovely garden with a lot of fresh food. And I'm sure a lot of that goes into a lot of the dishes they make at the restaurant. Herbs and vegetables, of course. They even have a little sanctuary there with llamas. We were celebrating. We were relaxing. And we weren't driving. So we took advantage. And we enjoyed some drinks. Gary always loves his organic pinkus. Hefeweizen beer. I went with the Eel River Porter, which was described as having chocolate and coffee notes. And I'm really into this chocolate kind of flavor in these darker beers. It's not sweet tasting. It's bitter because it's a darker beer. But I just love it. So we celebrated with that. And then we sat down for dinner. And the menu is creative. And lots of variety, lots of fresh food. You can even go to Google the Stanford Inn and see the menu at the Raven's restaurant. Gary ordered a ravioli with red bell pepper and sun-dried tomato, tofu ricotta, garlic caper marinara, walnut parmesan. Yes, yummy. And I had the enchiladas that had portobello mushrooms, cashew cheese, salsa fresca. Just wonderful dishes. And yes, of course, we had to have dessert. And Gary had the pecan torte with a house-made maple ice cream. And I had the chocolate and mint ganache tart. I love the combination of chocolate and mint. We took our time. We ate, we drank, we laughed. And this space, like I said before, not only is it beautiful, but it's infused with care and love. It just felt right. It just felt right. When you're at a place like this, a vegan bed and breakfast that has a fantastic restaurant, I think it's important to take advantage of where you are, and we did. So we may have overindulged a little bit in eating. We got up in the morning, and there was a designated time for breakfast. We typically don't eat breakfast until around noon, but the last seating was at 9:30, so we signed up for 9:30 and we headed over for breakfast. We started with fresh made carrot juice. And how many places can you go to that serve carrot juice in the morning for breakfast instead of orange juice? They had orange juice too, but I was very happy to have this nutritious, colorful option, and it was really nice to have a treat. And then we ordered some wonderful things for breakfast. Again, fantastic breakfast menu. I wish that they could have a chain, the Ravens, everywhere all over the country. Gary got a tofu burrito. You know how much he loves his burritos. It had garden vegetables and enchilada sauce, cashew cheese, vegan sour cream, and rosemary potatoes. They were really, really good. And I had a savory breakfast crepe. We make a lot of these things at home, and I have to say that the food tasted almost like the kind of food we make at home, which is nice. It's nice to be able to go somewhere and have the food that you like and not have to make it. And they did just that. And I got the rosemary potatoes as well. Afterwards, it was a funny thing. We post on Facebook where we're going, what we're doing, and we said we were in Mendocino, and we got connected to Dan Latterman and Sherry Soria. Do you know them? Sherry founded the Living Light Culinary Institute some years ago, and they recently sold it. So now they're retired. And I never knew that the Living Light Culinary Institute was in Fort Bragg, which is right next to Mendocino. Maybe I knew it was in Fort Bragg. I don't know. But I never put two and two together, and I didn't know that they were right there. But they reached out to us, and we ended up meeting and going for a walk at the Botanical Gardens. And that was a treat. After walking around Mendocino and along the coast and then going to the beautiful gardens, we were just indulging in nature's beauty. Sherry and Dan shared stories about running marathons. They're in their 70s and they look fit and fabulous. So impressed to see them in real life. I last saw them about 15 years ago in Costa Rica. They invited me to speak at one of their raw food conferences. And I don't think I've seen them in person since then, but wow, they haven't aged. They've gotten fitter and better looking. And just a testament to their healthy eating, which is primarily raw foods. They also talked about harvesting mushrooms, which they do a lot of where they are. We didn't stay out all afternoon because we had to get back for our afternoon tea. Can't miss it. We weren't really hungry, but like I said, we were in a place of fabulous food and wanted to take advantage of it all. And we got the apple cake, which was the treat of the afternoon. Afterwards, we did some exercise, lots of power walking to burn off all those calories and to look at more of the area because it's just so stunning. And then we returned for dinner for something lighter. We both went for the vegetable soup and salads. The vegetable soup, so simple. Just fresh garden vegetables, zucchini and carrots, and potatoes and herbs, tomatoes. Did I say tomatoes? And it kind of looks like, well, it kind of reminded me of like the Campbell's vegetarian vegetable soup that I used to have as a kid. But what a difference fresh organic vegetables make. So nourishing, so comforting. And then I had this heirloom tomato salad on a bed of greens. It's a work of art. The colors are so vibrant. And the colors, the vibrant colors, make you want to eat it. And the colors represent all of the great nutrients that are in them for you. It's all part of nature's intention. There's nothing like a fresh garden tomato. And in some ways, it saddens me to know how many tomatoes are grown in an industrial fashion to have a certain specific shape and no taste. And they're just mindlessly sliced and put on burgers and served in some restaurants, diner restaurants, low-end restaurants, and even some high-end restaurants on salads, and they have no taste. And many people go through life thinking that a tomato is tasteless, but there's nothing like a wonderful fresh tomato. Mm-mm. Of course, I had dessert. I went with the creme brulee, a vanilla bean and frangelico coconut custard brulee. Wow. That's all I can say. Perfection. We stayed over another night, and of course we got up in the morning for another wonderful breakfast, and then we were on the road down to the Bay Area. Our next destination was in Sebastopol. My friend Mike Boss, who I interviewed recently on this program, has recently bought the Sebastopol Horticulture Nursery. This space is incredible. The original owner had it for many years, and I believe it's about a 7-acre property, and it is filled throughout the woods with all of these potted plants and trees. It's a gorgeous space, and Mike has a lot of work to do, and he has a lot of plans of what he wants it to be. But if you remember my interview with him where we talked about edible perennials, he's passionate about growing perennial plants that are edible and making them available for people who want to put them in their gardens. It's all part of this sustainable agriculture, permaculture, organic type of agriculture that we need, small scale, where everyone is participating, and he's doing his part. I really am excited about this space. If you're ever near Sebastopol, I highly recommend you check it out. The first part of our trip, the first 3 days and nights, were spent experiencing very inspiring projects that can show what's possible. This lovely vegan bed and breakfast where anyone would be happy to stay and eat because the food is so delicious. And then going to a horticulture nursery that's filled with edible perennials and other beautiful plants can show you what's possible. Unfortunately, as we drove further south, we got into reality, traffic, highway driving, unfriendly drivers, angry drivers, stressed drivers, and back into the high-paced Silicon Valley. Fortunately, we were staying with friends, John and Dale Robbins, and that's like another little oasis from all of reality. And Dale Robbins did a wonderful job of making sure we were nourished throughout the rest of our trip. She made sure there were always fresh green smoothies for us in the morning to drink when we awoke, and made us a wonderful meal for dinner, which included, it was very Thanksgiving-like. She sliced a butternut squash and cooked it so it got soft, and then topped the dish with these caramelized Brussels sprouts. It was gorgeous in color and really, really tasty. Simple and delicious and nutritious, the way I like it. When I'm traveling and away from home, I like to make sure that I have beans. It's important to eat beans every day. And when I don't, frankly, I feel the difference. I need my beans. They're nourishing, and they scrub the insides. They feed your probiotics. They're filling. They're inexpensive. And they travel well. So I like to get those bricks, the kind that you open with a scissor. Whole Foods has them. I get the organic unsalted variety. And on the day that I was singing, I didn't want to be overly stuffed. This is an important thing. If you're performers, you kind of know what you need before your performance. And I know I need to be fed, but not stuffed. We had our regular bowl of rolled oats with some berries, and that was fine. And then I had to go to the rehearsal before the evening performance. And at the rehearsal, they brought us lunch. I ordered a very simple salad. And then we had the concert. And when it was all over, I was ravenous. But it was late, but not too late. And that's where the beans came in. I cut open my container of beans and devoured the entire package. It just seemed like the perfect thing. I like to have these beans as a snack or sometimes a meal. I know there are many people who feel like they can't digest beans. And there are some people who I guess never will be able to. I don't know. But my understanding is that if you want to get the benefit of consuming beans or legumes, the idea is to introduce them slowly into your digestive system if you're not used to eating them or you find that you get very bloated. And you start small. Start with a teaspoon. That's not very much. So you might buy a container of beans or a can and keep it in the refrigerator and eat one teaspoon a day and see how you do. And if it doesn't cause any problems, the next week or so, you can graduate to two teaspoons and you go very patiently, very slowly. And you can do this with other foods as well that you find give you digestive problems. Start with a very small amount. As your body learns to digest the food and create the appropriate bacteria to do the digesting. We're all born with a different microflora, a different microbiome. And this is, I like to call it the final frontier. It's probably not the final frontier. We'll be discovering new things all the time. But this is like the hot trending issue in health and nutrition. The microbiome, which is the bacteria that live in our gut from when we take food in to when we let it out. And there's biomes all over our body. Our skin has a biome. It's like a life or an organ or a community or another person that lives on you or within you. Our noses, there's a nasal biome. There's different communities of bacteria that are living within us and around us, throughout us, and we're just discovering all the things about it. And depending on where we live and how we were born, the bacteria that are part of us can be very different. So there's a lot of conversation now about the way, the ideal way we should be born, which is as nature intended, that babies should be born with a vaginal birth because the mix of bacteria that are in the vaginal canal are shared with the baby when he or she is delivered. And that sets up their foundation of healthy flora for the rest of their life. And now they're learning that those babies that are born with a C-section don't get that exposure. So some doctors and some women who are having babies are requesting that if they have a C-section, that the vaginal area is swabbed to collect that bacteria and to put it on the baby's face so the baby can breathe it in and take it in and have that appropriate beginning with healthy flora. It's fascinating. So we're learning a lot more about that. And also depending on what the mother was eating during pregnancy and the area around her and the culture and the environment and the foods will determine what the baby's flora will consist of. And then, unfortunately, many babies today are born with maybe an infection and a fever or something, and they're given antibiotics right away. Or maybe the mom had antibiotics. And this will destroy some of the important healthy bacteria that are so necessary for health. And this can plague people for the rest of their lives. or this can lead to autoimmune diseases, all kinds of imbalances. Now, if you were born by a C-section or if you had antibiotics at birth, that's not the end of the story. That doesn't mean you're doomed. You can repopulate with healthy bacteria, and you can do this by eating nutritious foods, by exercising, by going out in nature, and by not trying to be so sterile, because our body needs to interact with all kinds of bacteria. These are the things we're learning, and we'll see how it affects our health and population as time goes on. But many of these autoimmune diseases that everyone is being plagued with today is related to our society being too sterile, consuming too many antibiotics, being born either by C-section and not getting the flora that we're supposed to be getting from birth. This is great stuff. So when I talk about some people not being able to digest beans and legumes, this can be related to all of this. It can also be related to eating a standard American diet where one is consuming lots of refined foods, a lot of animal foods, and we haven't been feeding our good bacteria with the prebiotics that they need to flourish. And beans and legumes provide that prebiotic, that food, that nourishment for our good probiotics that are in our bodies. That's my recommendation. If you're not able to consume beans and you've tried, I do hope that you try the slow and steady patient method. And then there are many other things that you can do to help beans be more digestible. That is to soak them from dry, do that for 8 to 12 hours, and then you can rinse them and soak them again for another 12 hours and repeat this until you've soaked them for 48 hours. You can do this. You can soak them and leave them on the counter if it's not too warm outside, or you can put them in the refrigerator. It all works. And then when the beans are adequately soaked, you can rinse them again and cook them and make sure they're really cooked well so that they're soft. All of these steps help make beans more digestible. Some people recommend adding a little stick of kombu, which is kelp, or adding a little baking soda to the water. There are lots of different remedies. You need to find the one that works for you. And the last thing I want to say when it comes to digesting food and digesting beans is to eat slowly, eat mindfully, and chew. Who needs to be reminded to chew? Raise your hand. Yes, we all eat much too fast. So here's a little friendly reminder. Chew, chew, chew. Chew your food. We did get to stop into two of our favorite eateries while in the Bay Area. One is Dharma's in the Santa Cruz area. I always get the gardener salad. It's one of my favorite salads with their rich tahini dressing. It's always topped with sunflower sprouts. And I don't know anywhere else where they top their salads with sunflower sprouts. It's a consistent thing. They've been doing it for decades, and I know I can always get them there. It's something that I really enjoy. Gary always gets the breakfast burrito. And we also got to visit our favorite home away from home when it comes to food in the Bay Area, and that's the Vegetarian House. I can't say enough about them. I interviewed the manager, Sonny Mueller, earlier this year. I love this place. These people are so kind and caring and really believe in a compassionate world and sustainable, healthy food. And we went there after everything was done. My concert was over. We had visited everyone that we had planned on visiting. We were getting ready to leave the next day. And we settled in at the Vegetarian House. And just when we got there, I got a call from my mom. And she's 85. And unfortunately, she had just been scammed. Gave her credit card information away to someone who scared her. So instead of a relaxing lunch, I had my computer open and I was shutting down all of her accounts. And fortunately, nothing bad happened. We all felt a little violated. And it's another lovely part of humanity where some people like to take advantage of our vulnerable aging population. But the staff was really fantastic. And I made a point while feverishly working on the computer to pay attention to the food I was eating. And it was one of the most delicious meals I had ever eaten there, because while I was crazy trying to solve my mom's problems, I really made an effort to chew and think about what I was eating. The next day, we were leaving on a red-eye flight back to New York, and we stopped in the late afternoon at Veggie Grill, which is one of the other places we frequent in the Bay Area. Now, Veggie Grill is more of a fast food place, so you have to be a little more careful about what you're ordering if you want to be as healthy as you can. We ordered lunch, and I got a big kale salad, and I got a treat, which was the crab cake. Gary got the buffalo bomber salad, which has a vegan chicken with a spicy sauce. I find the Veggie Grill never leaves me satisfied. We get our plates and we eat, and it's just never quite enough. We sat there a while. We had plenty of time before our red-eye flight, so we decided to order dinner while we were there. And we got another round of food, and then we were really, really satisfied. That was basically our trip of good eating in the Bay Area and my long-time dream of visiting Mendocino. Again, I cannot recommend enough visiting this beautiful city and going to the Stanford Inn by the sea. If you have a special occasion coming up, something where you really want to celebrate, this is a place you should consider. As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, if you're an activist, someone who wants to make change, positive change, it's important to find time for yourself and to nourish yourself and re-energize. We can't all solve all of the world's problems, but we can do our own significant part. However small it may seem, it's important. This particular show is being broadcast on Election Day. I have pre-recorded it because I am working as an election poll worker in my neighborhood. I've done it once before, and I'm looking forward to doing it again. We work from 5 a.m. to 10 p.m. It's a long day. And something that really moved me was the opening of our manual that helps us throughout the day on how we take care of all of the procedures. There are a lot of procedures, and I'm sure that this is not the same in all voting districts, but this is for New York City, and I'm so proud of it because the basic guidelines, I know I've mentioned this before because when I first read this, I was blown away, but the basic guidelines for treating every voter is something we should do for everyone. And I just want to read from the guidebook because you might be able to use some of this language in relating in your own situations. So the mission of a poll worker is to take care of every voter according to procedure, treat every voter and visitor with dignity, respect, and courtesy, to ensure that all voters and visitors have a positive experience at the polls. And we're supposed to follow the procedures in the manual to be sure no voter is denied the right to vote. We are to remain calm and neutral in all circumstances. All voters deserve to be treated equally, regardless of race, color, ethnicity, gender, and physical or language ability. Voters may have different physical and/or language abilities that may require your assistance. Greet every voter with a smile and eye contact. I really appreciated this when they first said it, and it's so true in all of our interactions with each other. We need to look at each other. Some people have hearing impairments and need to see your face to see and hear what you are saying. and a friendly greeting will help the voter feel welcome and comfortable. Listen carefully and be patient. And it goes on. But really good information on how we should interact in general with each other. No one knows what the outcome of this election will be. And I think no matter which way it goes, we still have massive challenges ahead of us. As I mentioned before, there's still quite a bit of racism, homophobism, sexism, in addition to speciesism. And we need to work to educate as many people as possible so that we can improve the lives of more people on this planet. I don't quite understand the actions of some people to deny anyone on this planet a good home, food, healthcare, education. It's so easy for me to see that if everyone had these few simple things, we would see a lot less violence on the planet, and we would see a lot more good. And I'm just one of those crazy vegans who doesn't want to exploit anyone and wants everyone to have the best opportunity possible for their life. We just watched the documentary Quincy last night, and I cannot recommend it enough. It's about the life of Quincy Jones, the artist, composer, musician. He's done an incredible amount of work creating music. And I learned so much from this documentary. Some of the things that I learned, I was surprised to find out that Frank Sinatra actually did quite a bit. They discussed in the movie how when he was working in Las Vegas with Quincy Jones and many other Black artists and musicians, they weren't allowed, the people of color were not allowed to stay in the same hotels or eat in the same restaurants. And Frank Sinatra basically said, this is ridiculous and it's got to stop. And that began in that particular region improvements. But we have so far to go. It's so depressing that as humans, we make such a big deal about people's skin. It's just ludicrous. We make a big deal about people's ethnicities, and it's ridiculous. It's shameful. I have dedicated my life to whatever I can do to help innocent, voiceless, non-human animals and improve their life by encouraging people not to want to consider them as food. But exploitation is everywhere. And so much discrimination is everywhere. I don't know why it's a part of human nature, but it seems to be. And I hope that we see positive change. I hope we see positive change soon, because it feels lately in the last couple of years that things have gone a bit backwards in the United States, changing some of the regulations that have helped make it better for more people to have access to the things they need and access to better opportunities and better education. In the documentary, we learn about Quincy Jones' life, his early beginnings in Chicago, surrounded by crime, and how he had the opportunity to meet musicians and decided these were the people that he wanted to emulate. This was his family. These were the people he could respect and be proud of. And the message is so important that we need models. We need mentors. We need people to help us see the way and see opportunities. The documentary ended with a concert that he produced to open the Smithsonian National Museum of African American History and Culture. I look forward to visiting this museum one day, and it's part of America's story. And it's interesting how history is the story we choose to tell. And when we reflect on the past, very often, history or the stories that we tell are based on the victors, not the victims. That's what I loved about Howard Zinn's The People's History of the United States, a fantastic book, small print, over 700 pages. And I want to read it again sometime. It's a heavy book. But we need to tell a history that is reflective of everyone as much as possible. Women's history needs to be shared more, and the African American history needs to be shared, and the culture needs to be shared. We need to understand this. We need to learn. We don't just need to learn the history of those who have exploited. And now, as we're dealing with all the racism and homophobism and sexism that is re-emerging or coming out to the fore, going to a museum like this and learning can be so beneficial. As the website explains for the museum, stereotypes of African Americans grew as a natural consequence of both scientific racism and legal challenges to both their personhood and citizenship. The museum's 12 inaugural exhibitions focus on broad themes of history, culture, and community. They have been conceived to help transform visitors' understanding of American history and culture, to help visitors adapt to and participate in changing definitions of American citizenship, liberty, and equality. And it's so important more than ever. It's really a challenging thing for us to be able to look outside ourselves and see how we've been programmed by our culture and society. And some of us who have the very best intentions, who are truly kind and compassionate, may not understand how some of our actions can be harmful and hurtful. It takes a lot of courage and a lot of reflection to see if maybe some of our assumptions and cultural beliefs are racist, homophobic, sexist. It can often be a startling revelation. I believe we are here to learn and grow and improve. And I know that you do too. That's why you're here and that's why you're listening. And I am grateful for that. I want to leave you with some sweet thoughts. So last week was Halloween, right? And Halloween, it's one of those holidays where we're supposed to give away lots of sugary candy. It's a challenge, especially those of us who know that eating sugary sweets is not really a good thing. And why do we want to poison our children, our neighbors' children, our community's children with junk? It's a tradition that we do. Most holidays are filled with all kinds of sugary treats, refined food. It's such an odd way to celebrate, isn't it? Let's celebrate by poisoning ourselves. Hooray! It's a difficult thing to balance because we want to be part of society. We want to go along. We don't want people to think we're so weird that we want to give broccoli away for Halloween or something like that. Years ago, some people gave little apples away, and we can't do that anymore because some crazy person put a razor blade in an apple. And now people are afraid to consume fresh foods given to them by a stranger unless they are packaged and sealed so they appear safe. And some of those foods that are packaged and sealed, they aren't safe, right? It's ironic, because a lot of those foods are filled with artificial ingredients and colors that in children especially can cause attention deficit disorder, behavioral problems, all kinds of things. And we have been programmed to believe that because special foods, candies, whatever, are nicely packaged, that they're safe to eat. Okay, you get my point, right? It would be great, for example, if I could make some of my little fruit and nut truffles, for example, blended up some nuts and dried fruit. If I had a party, invited guests to my home, they would feel relaxed for the most part about trying them and eating them. But if I'm giving them to trick-or-treaters, for example, who come to the door, strangers, even though most of them are my neighbors, they're going to be less comfortable having something that I have prepared at home. It's funny, it's sad, it's ironic, it's twisted. So what can we do? Well, you can not answer the door and not participate. And there are people that do that, and that's fine. Fortunately for us, we live in an apartment building. The only people who trick-or-treat are the ones who live in this building or their family and friends that are in the building. So we all kind of know each other. I've chosen to buy candies from the Natural Candy Store. This is an online site that sells candies. And these are non-GMO. There are gluten-free options. There are no artificial colors or ingredients. And they specify what ones are vegan. And I chose to select candies that are organic, non-GMO, vegan, and gluten-free. I will admit, they are more expensive. And for some people, it might be easier just to go to your neighborhood drugstore, get a deal on some Mars candy bars, some Hershey Company candy items. They're inexpensive. But I don't think they're as good an option. And every time I have where I can make a statement or share some information, I will use it, even when it comes to candy. So for those concerned parents who might be reading the labels and the ingredients of the candy that their children brought home, they might recognize that the candies that we offered were special. Organic, non-GMO, vegan, and gluten-free, with no artificial colors or ingredients. Now, of course, the candies that are available in supermarkets and drugstores and these big box stores that offer foods in volume like Costco, they're cheaper. And they're cheaper because the sugar, the corn syrup, the unhealthy foods that are in the candies are subsidized by our tax dollars. So we are paying for them with our taxes indirectly. And unfortunately, the candies that I want to buy at the Natural Candy Store, candies from companies like Sajak, S-J-A-A-K, in Petaluma, California, which is a vegan company that makes wonderful vegan chocolate candies. These companies don't get those subsidies. Everything is backwards. We should be subsidizing the businesses that are making foods that are organic and are making foods that are non-GMO and don't have artificial chemicals in them. But we don't. We have a long way to go. I'm just encouraging you to check out the Natural Candy Store. I don't get any benefit by promoting them. But if you want to buy candies that are the best option you can for a sugary candy, this is the place to go. My favorite of all is the Ocho coconut bar. This is like a Mounds bar. It's chocolate covering some chewy coconut. It's really yummy. And what's nice is for Halloween, they offer these mini Ocho bars. They're just little bites. They're just enough. So they're good to give away for Halloween. But also if you do have a hankering for a treat, it's just a small bite. You don't need any more than one of these little minis. One more reminder, when you're enjoying one of these candies, don't forget to brush your teeth afterwards. Floss and maybe rinse with a little hydrogen peroxide and water. Oral hygiene is really a good foundation for health. And I have to remind myself too, because I don't want to have any more of those nasty root canals like I had last year. Those are some sweet thoughts for you before I go. And I will see you on the other side of the 2018 midterm elections. I hope it's good, and I hope we all survive it, and I hope we get to a better place. That's my wish. Oh, yes. Meanwhile, you can find me at responsibleeatingandliving.com for great recipes, read my daily blog, What Vegans Eat, and if you have comments and questions, do you know where to find me? I'm at info@realmeals.org. I always love to hear from you. Thanks for joining me, and have a very delicious week.